You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
What's up, everybody? Happy hump day. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm not sure what you saw last night, but boy, that was weird, wasn't it? I don't even know, like, presidential address to a joint session of Congress, the first one out of any administration. Generally a message of, here's what I'm going to do. Let's bring everybody together. I'm a president for all people. Not so much yesterday. It was more like a campaign rally. Very bizarre. I personally didn't like the behavior of the Democrats at the beginning. Like, jeering doesn't actually help public policy at all. It just makes you look juvenile. Also equally offensive, the Republicans then lambasting the Democrats from doing so as if they don't remember people shouting out from their side of the aisle back during the Obama administration, all sorts of things. And that Cruella de Vil moment from Marjorie Taylor Greene a few years back. Whew, they sure do have some short memories. Anyways, y'all, we'll get to all of that. But it is Wednesday. It is 2 p.m. And so I'm really excited to be joined by my colleague here at Civic Media, Gray Gunderson from Park Falls. It's great to have you back, Gray, for a little bit of what's going on in your neck of the woods.
Thanks for having me back again, Maggie. Glad to be here. And apologies. I know my audio might be a bit interesting. There's a foot of snow everywhere within 50 miles of here. So I'm in my home office today that does not have the carpeted walls that I normally call home, but my literal home, a little less prepared for it. But we're ready to rock anyway. We're here.
We are sure ready to rock. It has gone from wet and dreary to blustery and snowy here in my neck of the woods, Gray. But I wanted to start with a bit of these impacts of Trump. I'm just going to call it willy-nilly sort of systemless cuts to things. You had pointed out as we are preparing for this segment that it looks like DOGE is going to dismantle one of the federal offices in Wisconsin in Ashland. It's the Ashland Bureau of Indian Affairs. That's going to be shuttered by August. Tell us more about that, Gray.
So basically, I was able to find information confirming that the lease for the Bureau of Indian Affairs office in Ashland will close. And that's really the full stop. The lease is going to be terminated. There's something around 40 full-time employees who work with the Bureau of Indian Affairs and do a lot of work there on behalf of our Native American constituents and in the area, of course. But here's the thing. Those jobs have not received any clarity. Those human beings and their roles and their incomes have not been secured or confirmed as cuts. So these people, all they know is that the building I do my job in will be closed at the end of August. And that's, if you check on that article, you'll see the people are discussing, I don't know if we're going to go to a new building or not. 40 full-time employees, all they know, no more lease. You can't tell me that speaks of anything less than the worst planning ever, or at best, a spectacle for spectacle's sake. That, I mean, like, planning, it's not. That this is obviously not the fruition of a well thought out reasonable plan. So what's the actual goal?
Like, you shouldn't be hearing that the office in which you work is being shuttered because some random unelected bureaucrat in Washington posts a list of federal office closures somewhere on the interwebs, and you get called up because some eager beaver reporter finds out that your office is, which is basically what's happened. They have no word about whether or not their jobs will exist. Plus, as I understand it, Gray, that particular federal office is heavily used by our First Nation, Native American friends and colleagues and co-workers in that northern part of the state. It's essential as a touch point for their interactions with the federal government, is it not?
Yes. I mean, people, you hear about the Bureau of Indian Affairs and immediately you're brought back to seventh grade history class when you're talking, you know, you're talking about the Trail of Tears and you're talking about smallpox blankets. It's a really difficult thing, I think, for the average, I mean, I'll say it, for the average white person in America to understand what role the Bureau of Indian Affairs actually plays, because most of the time when we're hearing about it, we're hearing about it as a matter of political speech from other groups who are discussing it or using it as some sort of leverage in some political game or goal, like is exactly what we're seeing now. It's really easy to forget that people who live in this country depend on the Bureau of Indian Affairs for their relationship with the government, which is still massively complex. I submit my income taxes each April. They send me my return or lack thereof. That's about the only interaction I have with the federal government. My life is not overseen in the same way that any Native Americans is, which, by the way, the definition of privilege, my ethnicity isn't discussed in popular culture. That's nice. That's a nice thing that I don't know what it looks like not to be like that. That's privilege right there. I don't get discussed in the way. There's no Bureau of White Affairs. That's a privilege.
I couldn't agree with you more. Another construction that I like to say about privilege, if you think something's not a problem simply because you haven't experienced it, that's another expression of privilege. Like, oh, well, I don't know anything about that. Well, it must not exist. We've digressed, Gray, because there are some other closings that DOGE has taken credit for. I just want to summarize the closings, but there's one that maybe DOGE got a little ahead of itself in taking credit for. Apparently, both the FDA and some Social Security Administration offices are being closed in Wauwatosa, Green Bay, and Wausau. So those closures reaching again across the state, and also the Defense Contract Management Agencies in Milwaukee. That office is closing, along with the Federal Highway Administration Office in Madison. But there's a little wrinkle. DOGE claiming credit for apparently shuttering a Defense Contract Management Agency office in Merrill. But there's more to the story, isn't there, Gray?
Yes, top-notch reporting from the Wausau Daily Herald, the local paper, a reporter by the name of Eric Fance. I want to give him a shout-out because he nailed this actually back all the way in January, around the time that DOGE was really in the very beginning stages of entering the public opinion. But what Eric Fance caught was that one of the things on the Great Wall of Receipts, as it's been called, all of the money that DOGE is reporting to have saved the American taxpayers and the American economy, one of the things on that list of receipts was a building that was scheduled to close before DOGE ever existed. The closure for that building, that Department of Defense Contract Management Agency building in Merrill, their closure was scheduled before DOGE was spoken about in public. So for DOGE to claim that they saved those costs, I mean, is a pretty obvious error at best. I'll put it that way. It's a pretty obvious error at best. And I'm not benefit of the doubting right now. I don't play that game right now. I'm out of benefits.
Yeah, the wall of receipts isn't really that. It's just like a list of random things with arbitrarily listed financial figures with no why is the math. That it's very confusing. And lots of these sorts of items, Gray, have come out where they've claimed X turns out to not have anything to do with DOGE, or in fact, it was a complete and total fabrication. In fact, the five largest cost-cutting measures that DOGE claimed to have accomplished magically disappeared from that wall of receipts about three business days after they were posted. Weird how that's been working. Again, if these are such big savings, if it's so fabulous, I mean, don't just put a list out there on the interwebs. Actually give us the detail, you know, an audit trail of sorts.
Yes. The audit trail, some actual accountability. I mean, if there's fraud, why is there nobody being prosecuted for all of this fraud? Obviously, the fraud that's being stopped now is the result is where all this money's coming from, right? So there was fraud happening. So there was crime happening. So who is committing the crime and what are we doing to those people?
An NBC correspondent asked the press secretary that question. I think I've got the sound floating around here somewhere. We'll see if we can find it. But the answer was completely hilarious. She basically said, "Oh, that's a really good question," and then just kind of fumbled around with it. That's the thing that I think is so misleading to people. I am never going to say that government works exactly as it should in all situations, not even close. Do we need to be looking at potentially reducing real estate footprints? You know, are people are we being as efficient as we should? How do we measure that? How do we measure effectiveness? What is extra or unneeded, right? There are ways to approach those problems. And in fact, professional auditors have ways to analyze those things. This ain't that. There's nothing of the sort. And so we're in this very weird space where what's being claimed may not in fact be what is happening in reality. And I think there are lots of indicators that it's not. I think we deserve better. We deserve actual efficiency and accountability and transparency from the very quasi federal department that claims to be doing just that. You know, as I always like to say, who polices the police? Who audits the auditors? Who watches the watchers? Greg Gunderson joins me every Wednesday at the top of the show at 2 p.m. He's going to come back after these brief messages for more of what's going on in your neck of the woods. We got some fun stories as well to lighten up the mood this Wednesday afternoon. Folks, my name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I want to give folks a little tease, Gray, about what we've got coming up next. Have you done something real stupid, like when you were in high school, maybe? I mean, real dumb. Not per se dangerous, but just not the most considered thing. Maybe in a fit of competitive spirit that might be a little ill-placed. Well, we got just a similar story. I guarantee it might put a smile and maybe a little bit of queasiness in your stomach when we come back. I know it had me chuckling, Gray, and I had a little story that I want to share with everybody about, you know, a couple of 2-3 stupid things I might have pulled back when I was in high school. I hope you've got a personal story to share as well.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to join this conversation about what's going on in your neck of the woods, by all means, give us a jangle or a text, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. I'll be back with more of my fabulous colleague, Greg Gunderson, for today's edition of Your Neck of the Woods after these brief messages right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Follow away, oh, may the last one burn into flame.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. We like to begin our Wednesdays with a little bit of a lighter note. I'm joined each Wednesday at the top of the show at 2 p.m. by my colleague Greg Gunderson, coming from us from WCQE in Park Falls for a little segment we like to call Your Neck of the Woods. And Gray, we always have to do something that is completely unrelated to politics because we all deserve a little break. And you shared with me an absolutely hilarious story about a couple of high school basketball teams that then expanded to a lot of seniors, a bit of a rivalry between Spooner and Hayward. Tell us more about how they got into a game of chicken if you will.
Ooh, I like it. I like it a lot. I appreciate that. I saw this actually cross my desk this morning and I thought, oh yeah, Maggie, this is the kind of break that we need on a Wednesday. So anybody familiar with Hayward or Spooner? And that's a short list because Hayward and Spooner are generally small towns outside of the Berkey, like we've been discussing these last couple weeks. There's a major highway that connects the two and there's bridges that cross that highway. And if you are driving from Hayward to Spooner and you go under that bridge, you'll see the words Spooner sucks. Now, if you're going from Spooner to Hayward on the same road, on the same bridge, matter of fact, just the other side, it said Hayward blows. So same bridge, opposite sides. This bridge is the basis of the rivalry or the basis of the expression of the rivalry. They had a basketball game, these two boys' high school basketball teams, Hayward and Spooner, did in January. And in the I've lost my note on the actual result of the game because the game's not the point. Spooner lost to Hayward 91-68. But of course, Spooner
bit of a blowout.
Wasn't done. Yeah, they can't let that be the end of it. So what did they do? They went to the home team's McDonald's and decided we're going to throw down as many chicken McNuggets as we possibly can as a challenge to the people who just beat us. Like, we want a rematch same day. That's the American spirit.
Not on the pine.
Right? No.
But in the local Mickey D's, eating some heavily processed, suspicious looking, artificially formed little nuggets of chicken. Yes, indeed.
Meet me in the template building tile. Like, meet me on the grout. Yeah, basically. But 1,400 chicken McNuggets, Maggie. The first episode of this battle was 1,400 chicken nuggets on February 8th.
How many young men? Does it say how many young men?
So we've got a couple seniors who are credited as leading it, but all it says is that Spooner players and students. So we know it wasn't just the basketball team, but it's only as many players traveled. And these are small towns with populations in the school around 100 people. So you got to imagine between the players that are about 10 people per team, seriously, they usually have about a full bench and that's it. And then probably 20 or 30 students is all that I would probably
guess.
Maybe,
right?
Even that math is scaring me. So I'm going to nudge my guesses upward because that's just a frightening amount, but it wasn't over there. 75 to 80 students retaliated. There was flow the other direction. The final count for Hayward Nuggets, 3,200. Double Spooner's count plus.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, now, I actually think the relevant statistic here, and I'm going to throw it right back to Spooner and Hayward, because if Spooner only had thereabouts like 30 folks, they're averaging 50 nuggets a person. Hayward, if they got 80 folks throwing down the nugs, they're only averaging around 40 nugs per person. So I guess it depends on the metric, Gray, you know, data-driven performance assessments.
Are we talking totals? Are we talking about total
averages,
per year?
Right.
There's a lot of ways to split hairs. I think it depends how we want to spin it. Are we pro Hayward or pro Spooner? We get to decide right now. This is behind the scenes of the media. This is when we decide who we talk about like this.
I have to say this. I am agnostic as to Spooner and Hayward. I don't want to get sucked into a Northwoods rivalry, though I do think the per person nugget statistic is relevant to declaring a winner for sure. Wanted to share with you, Gray, and with each and every one of you folks listening. I come to you from 540 WAUK across southeastern Wisconsin. If you got a stupid high school trick story you want to share, 855-752-4842. I had a little bit of a stupid high school trick story. I ran cross country to get into shape for basketball. And one of the guys on our cross country team used to take us on fun runs, which were kind of like choose your own adventure runs. We're not trying to actually set any pace. It was usually on a Friday afternoon where you got meets coming up or something like that because you need an easy run. And we used to end up running through some golf courses. One of them might have been a private golf course. Listen, what Rodney Dangerfield does not want to see at his on his green with the pin in is a bunch of high school cross country athletes. And before you call up and get angry, folks, we never ran across the greens. We respected the greens.
You guys were part of the background.
That's right. There was some tomfoolery going on. But by far the stupidest thing we ever did when I was running cross country for Rufus King back in the day is that one of our buddies on the team had a Ford Festiva, okay? as distinguishable from the Ford Fiesta, which was actually a nicer car, a Ford Festiva. It was tiny. We squeezed 15 of us into a Ford Festiva. It was a full clown car of cross-country runners. Thank God most of them were like very, very, very thin, sort of lithe cross-country types.
Yeah.
We were able to sandwich in there. Oh, yeah, for sure. We just got a little bit of time left, Gray. Any stupid human tricks from high school you want to share here on live radio, my friend?
I'm afraid this nugget story had a little bit more direct relevance to me. There was a... There was a happening when I was in high school. For some reason, there was the ill-begotten choice made by the wonderful food service staff. My entire school career, great food the whole time in the different schools I was at. But one year they made this choice to try fish nuggets. And most people know when they hear the phrase fish nuggets exactly how that's going to go. But there was a bit of a refusal to accept feedback. You know, students shouldn't protest in the lunchroom. It's not a usually very effective way when you're in sixth grade. But a lot of students decided they'd pile their fish nuggets onto one particular student's tray and that he would then carry them all to the garbage.
He would literally bear the burden for everyone that was the conscientious objector to the fish nugget.
So picture not a pile of fish, but a pile of very poorly treated fish in nugget form paraded to the garbage can and several detentions handed out as a result. I didn't think that that kind of thing would result, and I didn't get a detention. I wasn't actually involved, but I also didn't have to eat fish nuggets that day. So it turned out.
Thanks so much to Greg Gunderson. Folks, if you're on the line, you want to share a quick story, we'll take you as soon as we're done with these brief messages. I got Jeremy Janae coming up next for a little bit of Milwaukee as microcosm for Wisconsin. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back. If you're rejoining us, my name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. My thanks to Greg Gunderson, my colleague at a WRCE in Park Falls. We are kicking off this episode of The Maggie Dawn Show with a little bit of what's going on in your neck of the woods, reliving some of our, you know, maybe sillier high school moments. We had a couple callers that wanted to get on that. Gray had teed up a story of a chicken nugget eating contest between the good folks of the Spooner and Hayward High Schools. Ali, you're first up from the Northwoods, then we're going to get to my very special next guest. Ali, go ahead, my friend.
Well, I can say that the Spooner and Hayward rivalry tagging of the bridge on Highway 63 has been going on as long as I can remember. Even unbeknownst to me, one of my teenage daughters had participated in this affair. And I give Spooner a lot of credit because they had to travel up there. So whereas the Hayward folks had the eaters right there. So no doubt they won.
They weren't taxed by their long travels to conduct said nugget eating contest. Thanks so much, Ali. Those high school rivalries always are many decades in the making. Seems true as well for Spooner and Hayward. We got Brian in Milwaukee wants to share a high school story. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, one of the cool things we did, I grew up in Kenosha and went to Wasocia Central, which is west of the interstate. Being farm country out there, one thing we've been doing for about 25, maybe 30 years, probably even longer, is during homecoming, they will actually close down Highway 50 and have a tractor parade. And all the farm kids will ride in on their John Deere tractors and Case tractors and all, and they'll park them all out in front of the school in the parking lot.
Love it.
I think that's probably one of the coolest things, you know, that we do, and they've still been doing it to this day.
Yeah, I love a good tradition, especially a good tradition in high school passed from one class to the next and from one generation of students to the next. Always good fun. I will share this last little story. We used to have a little bit of a senior skip day and a little bit of freshman hazing day. I'm sure you did too, back when I was at Rufus King here in Milwaukee. I escaped some of the freshman hazing. I think they just assumed I was older because I waltzed in at 6 foot tall. And didn't maybe look so much like a freshman. Thanks so much, everybody, for having some fun with Gray and I this afternoon. I want to bring up my very special next guest here to the Maggie Dawn Show. He joins me every Tuesday at 2:30. His name is Jeremy Janae. He is the creator and one of the journalists for Urban Milwaukee. I bring him on not just because it's very important to talk about what's going on in Milwaukee, but because Milwaukee is often a microcosm for the state of Wisconsin. As goes Milwaukee, so goes the state of Wisconsin. And Jeremy, the stories that we want to talk about today are no exception. Let's jump right into the lead problem in Milwaukee public schools. What is the problem? How is it discovered? And what is the current status, Jeremy?
Well, this is a great example of a microcosm story, because the reason it's a problem is because MPS has old buildings. But guess who else has old buildings? School districts across much of the state of Wisconsin. MPS's issues are, of course, heightened because of poverty. That is a problem that plagues Milwaukee, and it's something the whole state needs to work on. But MPS in particular, Milwaukee Public Schools, is struggling with lead in its schools. One, because it's actually getting recognized as a problem. I suspect it's a problem in schools where it's not being recognized. But two, because of bad practices, it appears, and we're looking at a case in Bayview on the south side of Milwaukee, Trowbridge School, that they had properly abated lead paint in the past. And the simplest way to properly abate lead paint, you just paint over the top.
Paint over it.
Make sure it's sealed, and then don't have that paint be scratched. In a school with kids, that's sometimes tough. But in the case of a health department investigation for a child whose blood lead level wasn't going down, health department officials walked into Trowbridge School and they caught an employee essentially red-handed scraping the paint with no containment. So what was happening was places that were properly abated before were all of a sudden testing positive for lead dust because it was just being spread throughout the school.
Jeremy, it's a fairly shocking story, because the only reason that we're hearing about this is through basically a series of random events that led to this being discovered, no pun intended, everyone. And that was a kid with high lead levels that was discovered because the city of Milwaukee has provided and encouraged parents, and they've got their health department out testing kids for lead levels in their blood because of the lead pipe concerns and other concerns with older structures in the city of Milwaukee having lead paint. The lead levels weren't going down in this young person's bloodstream, even though they had done abatement in the home. So then they looked to other sources, and there was just this happened. The child attended Trowbridge. Happened to be that the health inspectors walked in as this school employee was effectively spreading lead particulate matter from this paint around the school. This has then led to a sort of domino effect of additional testing and very angry parents. Here's my question, Jeremy. Why isn't it the response of MPS and the City of Milwaukee Health Department to say, we are going to go check the lead levels in every MPS building over the age of X and triage that, starting with those that have our youngest kids, because we know that the younger you are, the most serious the impacts of lead. Why aren't they testing everywhere systematically? How are they approaching this? Is there some triage system?
So you're asking the question I immediately thought of is why? Okay, we know this is a problem in certain schools. Let's go to all the schools it applies to. And that's where the rubber hits the road, because it's a money issue, but there's also a practical science component to it. Now, I'll break both those down. One, it affects every building built before 1978. And in Milwaukee, that's not virtually all of them, but it's a lot of the 100-plus schools that are in the city. Again, looking across the state, that's probably the same thing. But then from just a practical matter, there actually is a surveillance system built into this, and it's the kids. Everyone under the age of 6 and under in Wisconsin gets a blood test every year when they go to their annual checkup, regardless if it's on your insurance or anything, it's paid for. And it happens, and you should be getting those those red flags. And that's what happened at Trowbridge. A kid went for his annual test, tested for a high level. The basic response to that is then to go to the home and to do an evaluation with the parents and guardians, figure out, okay, this kid at grandparents' house a lot. And they did abatement at the kid's home, and then it was not moving. The blood lead levels weren't coming down, as you said. So then the intervention went to, okay, let's go to the school. And the reason you wouldn't just, okay, well, if MPS is now in problems, I think it's at 4 schools, why wouldn't you just rush to test all of them? We hit on money, but also it's kind of a moving target. Trowbridge looks like it was probably in good shape until this employee violated their lead practices for the district and started scraping paint. There probably was no issue at Trowbridge until that point. The district also, and the health department also tested a school at about 25th in Wisconsin, so on the near west side of the city, and they found, despite the school's age, no sources of lead contamination there. So there are schools where things are going right. The health department is expected to roll out a kind of guidance triage-like plan. What that looks like, we're expecting later this week or next week. But the big thing the district keeps saying, and we'll see what this means because we have a case of an employee violating it already, is they're really doubling down on their lead safe practices and making sure that training's in place.
Folks, you should be asking your school systems these same questions, but because again, old buildings for public schools is an issue across the state. I think, Jeremy, again, given what our natural questions were, one of the most important messages to parents everywhere is not only should you be asking your school systems, hey, what are your lead abatement policies? Do you have school facilities that were built prior to, what was it, 1976?
78.
Built prior to 1978. But make sure you are getting your kids these lead level tests every year as part of their physical, maybe even after the age of 6, if you can get coverage for it. If you're not sure, ask your local county or city or village health department for lead blood tests. And one of the things that I would also suggest is that if you have a positive lead blood test, get your kid retested if you can as well. Make sure you don't have a false pause. All of these little things. It seems to me, Jeremy, that what parents want, what every community would want, is what is the plan to address this and provide people with some peace of mind. We will certainly be watching the story with you as it progresses. If you're just tuning in, folks, we've got Jeremy Janney from Urban Milwaukee. He helped create that outlet, and he is one of the journalists there. He joins me every Wednesday at 2:30 for a segment we call Milwaukee as Microcosm, because oftentimes some of the things that go on in Milwaukee are things that you will see in your neighborhoods, in your areas of the state, maybe to varying degrees. But again, this is an example of something that is no doubt probably an issue statewide, but Milwaukee coming to the fore first and really certainly capturing some big headlines. Here is another story, Jeremy, that you pointed out to me that I am certain is going to have a pretty big regional impact if it goes as planned. The Milwaukee School of Engineering making an enormous investment in artificial intelligence and educating its students to be ready for these, basically this new AI era that we are entering. Tell us more about what's going on, Jeremy.
Milwaukee School of Engineering, based in downtown Milwaukee, private university, unveiled this week a $125 million Next Bold Step plan. The biggest part of that is a $76 million engineering building. And then the second largest piece of that is a new artificial intelligence school. And then the university is hoping to shore up some other programs, scholarship for students, things like that. But it's a huge bet on artificial intelligence, and it's being funded by one of the leaders in artificial intelligence. Dwight Dierks, who's a 1990 graduate of the school, is an employee number 22 at NVIDIA. And if you don't know what NVIDIA is, for a long time, if you're a computer gamer, you knew what NVIDIA was. Yes. They make the graphics cards to play the newest games. but now they make all the hardware and the base software that all these artificial intelligence applications are based on. So that company has done tremendously well. Dierks has done tremendously well, and he's now made his second $20 million plus donation to the school.
Yeah, MSOE has certainly garnered some big money donations from alumni as they have moved through their infancy and now into really expanding MSOE's footprint and really trying to make itself a tech and STEM hub here in this Midwestern region. It'll be very fascinating to see how that develops. I'm certain that that's going to drive a bunch of enrollment. If I had a do-over now and I was looking at colleges and universities and practice areas, certainly that would be an area that I would want to ensure that I am minimally conversant in. And if I could get through the coursework, maybe actually get a degree in. My goodness. Folks, you are tuned in to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is our segment called Milwaukee as a Microcosm. We got Jeremy Janine with me this afternoon. We got a couple more stories we want to cover with you. I'm going to tease this a little bit with you, Jeremy. The State of the City speech was it Tuesday morning?
Monday morning.
Days seem like weeks. Weeks seem like years these days. The State of the City by Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson on Monday morning. Some issues surrounding housing have been going on, especially affordable housing in the city of Milwaukee. I want to see what the mayor had to say about the Housing Authority for the City of Milwaukee. Quite a controversial agency. What does it say about affordable housing in your area of Wisconsin? We'll discuss more with Jeremy when we come back after these brief messages right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. We're talking about the big city here in Wisconsin, Milwaukee. It is a microcosm for much that happens across the state of Wisconsin. And each week we talk about it as such with my special guest, Jeremy Janine from Urban Milwaukee, the creator of that fine publication and a journalist there. He was busy covering Mayor Cavalier Johnson's State of the City address on Monday. But before we get to that, I wanted to remind everybody it's Wednesday. We're 2 days away from Friday. And on Fridays, you know what you see and hear at 3 p.m. It is the Ask Maggie segment. If you've got questions like Josh from Oshkosh, who texted in a great one this afternoon on our text line, you're going to want to get those questions in now. You can do so via our text line, 855-752-4842. Or, of course, via email at askmaggie@civicmedia.us. That's askmaggie@civicmedia.us. And again, our text line, 855-75-CIVIC. Jeremy, let's talk housing, which is an issue across the state of Wisconsin, especially affordable housing. Certainly, maybe not looking like we're going to get much relief in terms of single family housing prices anytime soon, with apparently a trade war on, though Donald Trump saying maybe these things are paused for a month. I don't know what's going on. It's crazy every day, but certainly an issue across the state. Here in Milwaukee, we have an entity called the Housing Authority of the City of Milwaukee, largely a federally funded agency. It is separate from the City of Milwaukee, but the city, through the mayor's office, helps appoint board members that oversee Hackham. They're responsible for all of the city of Milwaukee's Section 8 housing in large part, but they have been under a cloud for a number of years on basically two axes: financial mismanagement, the Federal Housing and Urban Development Agency saying that it's at risk of fraud, putting it on a watch list, as well as claims from residents in Hackham's Section 8 housing that it's unsafe, that there are infestations, that they can't access certain portions of the building, that they're not secured at night, that people who are non-residents are entering. Again, a lot of controversy here. What did the mayor specifically have to say about Hackham, Jeremy?
Well, he gave a 34-minute speech, and unlike last year when he said Hackham was moving in the right direction and he praised its then leader, Willie Hines, he didn't mention it at all in his speech. So the first question I got after the speech was, why? Why did you not mention it at all? And his response to me, and I'll read it, was, the fact of the matter is that my power over the housing authority is limited. And then he went into this kind of, it's not even a proxy war, just a straight up war of words he's having with this group, Common Ground, Southeastern Wisconsin, which is really pushing to reform the housing authority and bringing attention to these issues that affect the more than 10,000 residents. But then Johnson ended by telling me, I think we are moving in the right direction, which are oddly the same words he used last year during his speech. And at that time, things seemed to be moving in the right direction. But since then, the federal government has issued a troubled designation for the agency, and Willie Hines Jr. retired just months after saying he had years more on the job.
It's a fascinating tale that I think, again, even if you don't live here in southeastern Wisconsin, one, it's about affordable housing, and the people that are most vulnerable that need Section 8 assistance, need that federally supported housing, to have the agency that oversees and runs those housing developments under such a cloud for such a prolonged period of time, this has been going on for years, it is certainly disconcerting. And folks across the state receive Section 8 vouchers and receive some sort of subsidized or supported housing assistance. This is not what you would expect from your local governmental officials. Did he give any indication about what the plan might be in this regard, Jeremy?
They're trying to hire a new secretary executive director. That's going to happen later this year. There's multiple steps in that process. The big thing is they have a new CFO, a new financial officer, who's really kind of undoing this Rube Goldberg machine of moving federal money around. The weird thing about housing authorities across the country is they're often affiliated with a local government, but they're really federal creatures, and right. They are increasingly difficult to run because their budgets are so constrained. They only get limited federal resources, and costs are going up. And Brad Leak, who's the new CFO, is really identifying, okay, here's opportunities we can save money. Here's where we're misspending money. We're misallocating money. It seems like there's a lot of confidence that should be placed in him, and he's aware of that and is being very transparent, which is a departure from the Hines administration.
I think there are some indications for hope, but I think the point that you just made, Jeremy, is the one that will resonate across the state of Wisconsin. When we look at affordable housing, whether it's through these housing authorities, which again are federal creatures, they have these loose affiliations with local government, but it's one, here are the two things that I want people to take out of this. One, when you have shared governance structures across units of government, citizens need to pay attention, because when you can point at another unit of government and say it's because of them or I don't have to, it leaves space for these kinds of problems to fester over years. And the second point is the most important one here. There is simply insufficient federal resources going to housing, full stop. That is the true culprit here, not any individual administration or administrator or financial controller. We need more affordable housing. Thank you so much, Jeremy. Time flies when we're talking about important stuff. We'll see you next week for more Milwaukee as Microcosm. Folks, you're going to want to stay tuned. After the top of the hour, I'm going to be joined by Wisconsin State Senator Dianne Hesselbeck. We'll be talking about Trump's State of the Union, as well as the upcoming state battle over its biennial budget. Keep it locked right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.